This show was first broadcast on Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. For more information on our lineup of shows and the role we play in the media, visit freefm.org.nz.
The following program, Over the Fence, is content shared with us from Irirangi o Whangaroa, Raglan Community Radio 98.1 FM.
Good afternoon, folks. And a beautiful afternoon it is. My name's Craig, and this is the Over the Fence show here on Raglan Community Radio 98.1 FM. And to our friends over the Divion 89.0 throughout the Waikato. Hope you're having a lovely day out there, folks. And yes, first time back in the studio for a couple of weeks. I've been away, but it's good to go away, good to come back. And so coming up today, we have the usual features we have coming up. Some rural headlines, have a look at the weather, do some gardening to-dos. And later on, I have an interview to play from Helen Bint, who I did an interview with maybe last week. And we'll talk a bit more about that as time goes by. But while I get the headlines organised, here goes song I feel like today for whatever reason. Bob Dylan's Isis. Hope you enjoy this one.
I married Isis on the 5th day of May, but I could not hold on to her very long. So I cut off I rode straight away over the wild unknown country where I could not go wrong. I came to a high place of darkness and light. The fighting line ran through the center of town. I hitched up my pony to a post on the right. Went into a laundry, I watched my clothes down. A man in the corner approached me for a match. I knew right away he was not ordinary. He said, "Are you looking for something easy to catch?" Said, "I got no money." He said, "That ain't necessary." I gave him my blanket and he gave me his word. I said, "Where are we going?" He said, "We'll be back by the fort." I said, "That's the best news that I've ever heard." I was thinking about turquoise, I was thinking about gold. I was thinking about diamonds and the world's biggest necklace. As we rode through the canyons, through the devilish cold, I was thinking about Isis, how she thought I was so reckless. How she told me that one day we would meet up again, and things would be different the next time we were. If I only could I hang on and just be her friend. I still can't remember all the best things she said. We came to the pyramids all embedded in ice. He said, "There's a body I'm trying to find. If I carry it out, it'll bring a good price." 'Twas then that I knew what he had on his mind. The wind, it was a howling, and the snow was outrageous. We chopped through the night, and we chopped through the dawn. I was hoping that it wasn't contagious, but I made up my mind that I had to go on. I broke into the tomb, but the casket was empty. There was no jewels, no
Marvin had. When I saw that my partner was just being friendly, when I took up his offer, I must have been mad. Inside, threw him down in the hole, and I put back the cover. I said a quick prayer, then I felt satisfied. Then I rode back to find Isis, just to tell her I love her. She was there in the meadow where the creek used to rise, blinded by sleep. In need of a bed, I came in from the east with the sun in my eyes. I cursed her one time, then I rode on ahead. I said, no place special. She said, you look different. I said, well, I guess. She said, you've been gone. I said, that's only natural. She said, you're gonna stay. I said, if you want me to, yeah.
Dylan's Isis there off Desire album. And now it's time for the rural headlines here. Primary sector headlines, I probably should say, on the Over the Fence show. And the government has backed down on a proposal not to let permanent pine and exotic forest owners earn money from the emissions trading scheme. This came after alarm that pine plantations would gobble up productive land. So the government has been looking to discourage the planting of new permanent exotic forests by excluding them from the ETS. And yeah, it's taken a few twists and turns, and it probably still will, so there'll be more to come on that, no doubt. And New Zealand's arable sector of production has increased by 30% in the last 3 years. The arable sector, of course, includes production of wheat, barley and maize for human and animal consumption, and also seed production. The Arable Food Industry Council Secretary Thomas Chin said, "Everything starts with the seed, and we get that piece right, and the value chain further on down from us is also in a good space." And carpet company Bremworth is looking at the option of providing farmers with long-term controls to secure strong wool supplies to make carpet. Bremworth Chief Executive Greg Smith said it had been a challenging time for farmers, so the company wanted to provide more security for farmers while ensuring a secure supply of wool. He adds the company wanted to learn from the merino sector, which offers 5 to 10 years contract to growers. So it's a good initiative, I think. And the Gore District Council, sticking with wool, Gore District Council is using a natural wool blend insulation in the construction of the new Gore Library and Community Centre after copping flak from local farmers. The wool blend costs about 12% more than the fiberglass, but is safer to work with, and any offcuts are sent back to the manufacturer to be recycled as new insulation. So
That's exactly what they should have done. So good on your farmers for giving them a bit of flack about that one. And kiwifruit growers can now vote on whether they think Zespri should increase plantings of their Sun Gold variety in existing locations overseas. Sun Gold is currently grown in Italy, France, Greece, Korea and Japan. And Zespri wants to increase their plantings by up to 10,000 hectares to ensure Sun Gold is available to sell all year round. So we're just going to see what the growers think about that. And the Chatham Islands farmers are facing the possibility of not being able to ship stock off the island during the busy autumn period next year. The freight ship, the MV Southern Tiara, the only ship run by Chatham Islands Shipping Limited, which carries stock off the island, requires maintenance and repairs. The 35-year-old vessel is expected to be out of action for 4 months from February 2023 and is to be replaced by a barge service for essential inputs like food and fuel, but cannot carry a livestock. So that's upset a few farmers over on the Chathams. And that's where I've actually been for the last couple of weeks over there, folks, Chatham Islands. And the interview later on is a lady from over there, Helen Bint, and I'll bring you parts of that interview in a little while after the weather and the gardening to-dos. But anyways, for now, speaking of the Chatham Islands, here goes out one for anyone listening on the Chatham Islands.
Thanks for all you've shown us. This is how we feel. Come sit next to me, pour yourself some tea. Just like grandma made when couldn't buy tea. Things were better then, once but never again. We've all left the den and tight by it. Cheap, cheap trade, left by our time. Ticket costs only. Shot of batteries, but still making noise. Tell me what to do now. The tank is dry, now this wheel is flat, and you know what else? Guess what I received in the mail today? Words of deep concern from my little brother. Building's not going as he planned. Foreman has injured his hand. Dozer will not clear a path. The driver swears he earned his man. The workers are going home. Workers are going home. The workers are going home. The workers are going home. Yeah.
Weezer there. My name is Jonas of the Blue Album. Hope you enjoyed that.
And weather time now on the Over the Fence show, and some high pressure brings settled conditions and clear skies to much of the South Island this morning. So a frosty one down south, possibly down to negative 10, they say, degrees Celsius in parts. There's a chance of thunderstorms in Northland today, which is the result of converging winds, reasonable surface moisture and cold upper air temperatures. A high is forecast to spread over the South Island on Friday, and then expands over the North Island on Saturday, bringing settled and probably frosty conditions to maybe around here and Whangarā and probably throughout the Waikato as well. And for the Waikato, rain or showers are north of Coromandel. Some rain may be heavy. The rest of the Waikato, mainly dry with partly cloudy skies and sunnier in the South Waikato. So cloudy today, tomorrow, sunny Friday, maybe showers Saturday and cloudy Sunday, Monday, with maybe showers returning Tuesday. Daytime temperatures range from 13 to 16 degrees this week. And nighttime temperatures, a bit of a mixed bag. 7 degrees tonight, 5 tomorrow night, 4 degrees Friday, Saturday, Sunday, then somewhere between 10 and 13 into early next week. And the winds today are south-southwesterlies. Tomorrow they will be south-southwesterlies. Southerlies Friday, moving south-southwesterlies Saturday, northerly Sunday, then north-easterlies into next week. So, yes, changeable, the winds, but not too strong. Humidity today somewhere between 66 and 79 degrees, upset, sorry. And the sun rose this morning at 7:12 a.m. and will set at 5:40 p.m. The length of visible light is 11 hours and 22 minutes. And the actual day length is 10 hours and 27 minutes. So they're certainly stretching out a bit, all right. And tomorrow will be 1 minute and 58 seconds longer than today. And I had a quick flick back. So 3 weeks ago it was 1 minute 19 seconds, so... what's that, about 40 seconds or something. Over the last 3 weeks, the days have increased in length. And the moon, ladies and gentlemen, is a waxing gibbous, somewhere between 93 and 95% illuminated. Will rise at 3:07 p.m. and will set at 5:54 a.m. with the full moon coming up on the 12th of this month, only a few days' time. And I haven't really done too much in the way of rainfall today, but thank you, Craig. Had 33 mils up there in Tahutawai, but I'll get more onto that by the next show. All right, so there's the weather. I'll come back with some gardening to-dos. But for now, here goes a song by Darcy Clay. What about it?
Don't wanna
West Auckland native Darcy Clay there with What About It. Now, so I've gardening to-dos here on the Over the Fence show. And if you're gardening by the moon, good time to sow seeds for tomatoes and digging green manure crops. From Friday, you can sow beetroot and Florence fennel into seed trays and start to chit the very early season potatoes like the Swift and Rocket varieties. And to plant in the Waikato this month, a few things coming up, moving into spring. And these are apples, asparagus, beetroot, blackberries, blueberries, bok choy, cabbage, calendula, cauliflower, coriander, cyclamen, feijoas, forget-me-not, gladiolus, kale, leeks, lemons, lettuce, lily, limes, mandarins, mesclun, onions, oranges, parsley, parsnip, peas, peaches, pears, plums, radish, raspberries, rhubarb, rocket, roses, spinach, strawberries, and silver beet. So, yes, plenty there to do. So, there's your gardening to-dos for the week, and now here's one from off his new Sensations album, Lou Reed, called My Friend George.
Read in the paper about a manky with a sword, and that made me think of my friend George. People said the man was 5'6". Sounds like Georgie with his killing stick. Hey, bro, what's the word? Talking about my friend George. Hey, bro, what's the word? Talking about my friend George. You're talking about my friend George. I knew Georgie since he's 8. I always thought that he was great. And anything that George would do, you know that I would do it too. George liked music and George liked to fight. He worked out in a downtown gym every night. I'd spar with him when work was done. We split lips, but it was all in fun. Hey bro, what's the word? You're talking about my friend George. Hey bro, what's the word? Talking about my friend George. Talking about my friend George. Next thing I hear, George's got this stick. He's using it for more than kicks. I seen him down at Smalley's bar. He was wired up. I tried to calm him down. Avenge yourself, he says to me. Avenge yourself for humanity. Avenge yourself for the weak and the poor. Stick it to these guys right through their heads. No, the fight is my music and the stick is my sword. And you know that I love you so. Please don't say a word. Can't you hear the music playing? The anthem, it's my call. And the last I seen of Georgie was he running through the door. I says, hey bro, what's the word? Talking about my friend George. Hey bro, what's the word? You're talking about my friend George. Talking about my friend George.
There with my friend George, and here's the Pixies, Where Is My Mind?
Stop.
Welcome back to the Over the Fence show here on Raglan Community Radio 98.1 FM and Free FM 89.0, I should say. And now I'm going to play for you an interview I did a few days ago over on the Chatham Islands with a lady called Helen Bint, who's got deep roots over there in the Chathams. And yeah, she's going to chat about a bit of the history and a bit of the goings-ons over there. So it was quite a long sort of chat, so I'll probably bring in at least another part of this interview as time goes by. But anyway, for today, here's this one, Helen Bint.
G'day, Helen.
Hi.
And I guess, firstly, Helen, this is kind of the area your grandparents grew up?
It's nostalgic for me coming back here now, because this is where we grew up, and I've got thousands of memories of all sorts of things happening as children, and we had to be pretty much like responsible as adults, as young children. Our grandmother was Victorian, strict, good morals, and added all up like that. We were even milking the two and three cows at 4 years old. and starting and stopping the windmill. And it's amazing what children do. Even when I was over at the stone cottage, mum and dad and three of us kids shifted over there when I was when I was 3, 4 and 5. I was born in 1951, so I was 3, 4 and 5. And my baby sister got burnt badly by putting a plate of hot porridge over herself in her pram, and mum had to leave.
That sounds horrible.
Yeah, and dad had just come over here to his parents on the motorbike to work, and we went up the hill to light a fire to alert people, the family over here, that we needed help, but nobody saw the flames, so mum started off with all of us kids, and there was no road those days, just gorse and wild cattle. So she had to leave me there and my younger sister Shirley, who was 3, I was 4 and she was 3, to look after the baby who would have been crying from being burnt. And mum ran over here, 5 kilometres it is, to get dad on the tractor to take her to the hospital.
It's a long run.
Yeah, she would have been crying. And they said when they got back, I had her sitting on the potty. So you just had to grow up and do what you had to do at the time, which amazes me, Yeah, just living here, back here again. I've been here for 6 months now because I had to shift out of the cottage. And it's, I've got, yeah, lots of memories of even playing. And this is a playhouse, you know. It's nostalgic as anything. It's just amazing.
Because your grandparents owned this farm, didn't they?
Your great-grandparents.
Great-grandparents.
They had a dairy farm in Rickerton in Christchurch. Philip Cannon, his name was.
Right.
And they owned some of the Heathcote Hills, Tiringawana, big guest house up on top. And so they sold both blocks and came and bought this 23,000-acre sheep station in 1903. We had years in Nelson, and I decided about 12 years ago to do a Thelma and Louise, except for the cliff at the end. Sold my house to my son, who's living with me. He's an engineer in Nelson.
Right.
And bought a Hilux and a trailer and a Jeep, and another son came down with me deckhanding for 3 years. We said goodbye.
That's in Nelson?
Yeah, we said goodbye to everybody in Nelson. Had our Beverly Hillbillies trailer and ute loaded up to come on the ship. I had it all jacked up to come on the freight ship from Timaru, so we had to drive everything down there. So they loaded everything on the ship, and I remember standing on the wharf talking to the skipper after they'd loaded up, and I said, can we go on a turn? He said, no, it's just for cattle and sheep and freight. I said, well, I used to go on all the Hammond Company ships when I was a kid, even though all three of them sank in my life. I'm not exactly trusting of freight ships, but I felt like an adventure. He said, you're all right then. I said, how much? And he goes, same as a cow.
All right.
Because
that's a good deal.
Yeah, he didn't know what to charge, you see, because they don't take passengers. And it was a 3-night and 2-day trip. And I spent most of my time down in the engine room. I grew up with engineers and mechanics all my life, so I'm interested in that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And up in the bridge with the skipper and looking at all his charts and things. And yeah, it's just been amazing coming home. There's more adventures happening here every day, even out at the remote stone cottage. You know, you had adventures every day, and yet I lived on the main road in Nelson, but you don't have adventures there. Some outstanding things happened. A couple of yachts called in.
Before you get on to that one, I mean, these 3 ships you see now sinking. When was those?
The Homedale sank about 1974 when it was taking a loose cement to Norfolk Island. Was tipping over and over and over, the cargo shifted. But the Germans sunk the Homewood in the Second World War. It was only 2.5 hours out, loaded with sheep and passengers and a horse. And
out of the Chathams?
Yeah. There's a book about it, a little book. It's quite rare, and it's called Captives and Castaways. I've got it. They put the passengers on the 2 ships and put them on Emerald Island above Australia after sinking about 6 more ships. So it was quite an adventure for them too, not so good.
I didn't even realise the Germans was way down here.
Yeah, I know. I don't know why, because we're no trouble to anybody here. Mum was going to take us up, all of us 7 kids up, for our first holiday to New Zealand, to Christchurch, to her mother's, in 1959 on the Home Glen, but it sunk on its before it came down here, on its way from Timaru to Christchurch, I think. There was all loss of life on that one.
What, it got blown up or just like hit a reef or something like that?
I don't know what happened. They were pretty low in the water and old and not surveyed and things like that probably. So that we've got a massive history of thinking down here, even at down Toobung Point down the end of this beach. The Himatangi, who was our cargo ship for years, is under there. And I was reading a heritage book the other day about history, about the first four sailing ships that came from England with passengers into Lyttelton. And one of them was the Randolph, and that sunk down there too. And I couldn't believe it. My grandpa here actually got the cannon off it.
Oh, right.
And they had it set up at the front gate because our name was Cannon then. And I can remember them letting it off for visitors once. They rammed it with gunpowder, I think, and newspaper and a big long fuse and lit it. And as a little kid, all I remembered really was the rust rattling on the roof from the vibrations. Yeah. So we grew up with adventures, and there was no road out here in the old days, and we had to go at low tide and go down Waitangi Beach, across the point and down Maunganui Beach and across swamp. We got stuck all the time. You know, it wasn't a time when we didn't get stuck in the swamp, and it was a, you hardly ever went. Once a year maybe we went to town.
So what was that, the old like Land Cruisers or something, I suppose?
No, David Brown tractors.
Oh, right, the old David Browns, yeah.
Well, Grandpa had an ex-army Dodge truck. That I've got a photo of it here. That was really good because it was low-geared and it was good for shifting sheep because you could just, you know, potter along down the beach behind them. I remember all the tractors here as a child, even the old Lands Bulldog steam tractor. And I was just telling somebody else about it the other day. As a child, you take notice of things. They used it to cut the firewood on a big saw bench at the end of these sheds, but it had to be
running off the...
run in reverse. And do you know how they made it reverse? They just crossed the belt.
Ah.
And they went slop, 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 sort of hitting each other.
Yeah.
I remember the sound of it still.
Yeah, right.
And it's so simple. Yeah, okay. And we've had, like I said to other people, I saw the Sunderland hit rocks on takeoff in 1959 when I was 8. Dad helped run the airbase, and we were down there a lot.
Oh, was there an airbase over here? Or?
Yeah, the lagoon. So there was an airbase.
Right, eh?
With a jetty and two boats, the Anakoa and the Tasman Air, that took passengers out to the plane. And we went to high school. One year after the other, went to high school in New Zealand to aunties, whoever could have us. And we landed in Evans Bay in Wellington. I got the ferry to Christchurch to an auntie, and two sisters got the train up north to Auckland, one to Kerikeri. So, we travelled in those Sunderlands. And in fact, when I was at the airport going out on my last flight, I was talking to a Chatham Island man and about the Sunderland, and he said, yeah, he said they were so slow that the seagulls used to fly alongside them when they were taken off, and then they veered off in their own direction through lack of competition. But anyhow, when this one hit rocks, a big whistle, I remember as a kid, this great big whistle went, and the men jumped into the two boats off the jetty and raced out and got all the people off it. There was a lady on a stretcher going out for medical care in the aisle. They had to get her off first. And it wouldn't have sunk because of the floats, but it was low in the water. I've got photos here.
Mm-hmm.
And they revved it up after that and beached it, and then over the months took the engines back to Hobsonville for Nuapai.
Yeah.
They were Rolls-Royce engines. And they pulled it up on the shore, and we used to play in it quite a bit up on the little lake shore. And Dad got some aviation fuel out of that plane, and he was doing up an old 1936 Chev at the time. And he took me with him, testing it out down Maunganui Beach at low tide. It didn't have any doors or seats. We were sitting on wooden beer boxes and going like hell. And I wouldn't have a clue how fast we were going. I just remember the puppy shells crackling under the tyres, doing 120 miles an hour because they were V8s, those 1936 Chevs. Yeah, it's just been an interesting time.
Wonder what happened to that old 1936 Chev, do you remember?
We left the island in 1967 so we could all be together in Nelson to... You know, with high school and that, so he probably sold it to somebody else.
Yeah,
certainly run them into the ground down here, you know.
Yeah, I see a lot of wrecks on the side of the road and that around.
I know, there was on the way out here to Roto, where you first start coming across houses on the way to town, there's a modern, small, pale green car in a paddock up against a fence. And I said to my son on one of his trips when he took me into town, I said, why don't you get that one there for me to fix it up? He said, oh, he can't have that. That's an electric fence. So they just leave it there and hitch it onto the battery under the bonnet. It's, you know, don't have to worry about cattle or rust or anything.
Right, right. All right. Electric fence charger, the old wagons.
Oh, I love the ingenuity of people down here. And I've made a list here of funny things that happened. I was over at the Stone Cottage for 6 years. And
well, tell us about the Stone Cottage first. Was it the first building over here or something? Or the first missionary house or something like that?
Four German missionaries came out from Germany to New Zealand about 1840 and then came on down here to turn people to Christianity. And they didn't get any converts. They're too grumpy. But they.
So in 1840, what sort of folks was out here? It would have been the Moriori, the Māori, the Sealers, Whalers.
I can even remember drums of whale oil here that my grandparents used. They still had it here.
What did they do with it?
Well, oil certain parts of tractors and things, I think, and generators. Certain smell to it, I know that.
Like a stinky smell? Or?
No, Swedish. So they functioned as sheep farmers, really, more than missionaries. They're called missionaries, but they had about 12,000 acres, and it's, they functioned as a farm. Mm. But they built that house out of, a lot of people think it's basalt from below the upthrust volcanic cones called Maunganui Hill, but it's actually the compressed volcanic ash. It happened under the sea, because I have a lot to do with geologists that come down here.
Oh, right.
And it's called Tuff, T-U-F-F, and they chopped it into squares and built the house in 1868. Quite amazing building to live in, really. Yeah, I wasn't cold. Well, the only time I was cold was a couple of winter times, and then some fisherman had said to me, why don't you have a bottle of rum? And I only have about a beer once every 10 years, so I'm not a drinker. So anyhow, somebody gave me a bottle of rum and it sat behind an armchair in the kitchen for about 2 years. And about my last year over there, which was a couple of years ago now probably, in the winter time I was making scones at the bench and I was so cold. And oh, now's the time to try it out, because they had it on ships, the crew in the old days, to keep warm. So now's the time to try it out. So I had a couple of big swigs of it and got quite happy. And then I thought, well, I still don't know the answer, because I just didn't care that I was cold.
Yeah.
But anyhow, that's just one of the things. And I had lots of people call in. I got up in the morning and made the house presentable, fed the chooks and everything, so it didn't hurt if people just turned up out of the blue, which was how it happened.
Well, it's a tourist kind of thing over here, isn't it? The old Stone Cottage. Yeah.
It got built up more and more because I had nice gardens and told them stories like I'm telling you, and it became a lovely place to go. But some outstanding things happened. One day I was out in the garden after lunch and these two young Irishmen, one was called Paddy, had to be Paddy of course, turned up and I showed them through the house and told them everything. And I said to them that the Life and Leisure had done a story on me living over there. And in the last paragraph, I said, I get sick of people asking me if I'm going to get married again. I said, I'd rather have a carrot cake, actually. And they printed that. Told these two Irish boys, well, they're only about 21, about that. And the next day, I was out in the garden, and they turned up with this carrot cake. They came all the way out, 3/4 of an hour trip from Waitangi with a carrot cake with a plastic top on it. You know how they buy them.
All right, yeah.
And
yeah.
I said, they handed it over quickly over the gate. And I said, you didn't come out here all the way just for that, did you? And they said, yeah, but we can't stay. We have to get back to the hotel and watch the Blebs at low cup.
Right.
And I'll never get over that they made that big long trip just to give me a carrot cup.
Well, you must have made an impression on them, haven't they?
Yeah, another day I nearly got caught tipping a pot of water over myself because there was no washing facility, so I just heated up a big pot of water and lukewarm tipped it over myself out in the lawn. And I just got dressed this morning and these two men from Colorado walked over the sandhills and they came and said hello. They had a trimarine anchored out just down the beach and they said they own a propane gas business in Colorado and they ski for 6 months of the year and travel around the Pacific on the yacht the other 6 months.
Well, sounds like a little life, doesn't it?
Yeah, and so they had a yak and they walked to town. Somebody would have picked them up, fisherman or farmer or something, and at Chatham Island, a cool yak, put them home. And I went with a torch down over the sand hills down the beach to have a look at the yacht, which was almost up on the beach. And they spent a week down at the Chathams, then went. And 3 weeks after that, three men on the way to Chile called in and said hello. So you just never knew what was going to happen each day there.
It makes it exciting, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. It was just an amazing time. I kept a diary mostly, so hopefully it'll, you know, be printed one day. The other thing that happened that's outstanding is I was out in the garden again in the afternoon, and five brand new Holdens turned up at my gate coming into the section. I went out and, you know, said Ed Finn was the manager of Holden. They brought them down here to advertise 65 years of Holden. So they had all these flash cars and their drivers, and I said, which one are you leaving for me? And he said, you and the other 21 people that have asked already.
So
I went and won a big black hearse type one out in the paddock. We had to put them in the line, take photos. They were all in the Auckland newspapers about it.
Right.
Photos and that. And I went in the black one with him, and I said, I suppose this one's 100,000, is it? He said, no, 76. And I said, that'd be no use to me because I'd have to park it in the sitting room so it didn't rust. So I still keep in touch with Ed, actually. Finn, his name is. And he said, I always answered the phone, said, Ed, Finn Holden here, and I had to think of another name now. I said, well, your surname's Finn. I reckon Huckleberry suit you. So he does call himself that now. So, yeah, there was just so many people, Craig Emini and Marion, who owns Air Chathams. They came out and brought a friend out who, and his wife, who Dave Baldwin, he's got a flying doctor surface all over the North Island.
Oh, yeah.
And I was reading an Australian flying doctor service book at the time, and he sent me three of his books that he's published.
Right.
So, yeah, again, and I had 13 Lutheran bishops turn up. One day they came from all over the world to have a look at this cottage that they...
Because that was the ones who set it up, the Lutherans,
yeah,
was it?
Yeah, missionaries, yeah.
Right, eh?
And they planted an Antioch tree in the garden, and I've got Grandma's old piano over there. And one of them played it, and, oh, he made it rock like Jerry Lee Lewis. And I just sat on a bed and cried from... I don't know, it was so exciting, it was unbelievable. And I said to him, she was a strong Christian, we were only ever allowed to play hymns on it, and it would never have been played like that in its life. And I just wish he
no could. No rock and roll on the old piano, eh?
Gee, it was, I wish I could have videoed it, some of those things that happened. And yeah, there was just adventures all the time.
Yeah, right.
And another funny thing that happened, there was an Orion flying up and down over this beach really low, backwards and forwards. So I rang Air Chathams, and I know Vanessa in the office, and I said, what was that Orion doing? And she said, oh, just checking on shipping. And I said, by the way, do you know how hedgehog is made? I said, I've just been out and shot a possum up on top of the roof. I shot them every night.
Mm-hmm.
And I came back, and there's a hedgehog on the brick path coming into the kitchen. I've never seen a hedgehog out here before. And then I was lying in bed thinking, how the hell do they mate? She said, you ring me back in half an hour and I'll download and tell you.
Right.
So if I did that in New Zealand and rang in New Zealand and asked them how hedgehogs would mate, they'd put me away. It's just, yeah, they tell you what's what down here with ships and planes and everything. You can ring people and they'll tell you. You know, it's such a special place to live. It's just, it is living in the 50s still here.
Right, eh?
Yeah. It's sort of like no rules. Totally free. I don't know, you can do what you want to do. Something very satisfying about going to bed at night and having fixed something that didn't seem fixable. And it's, they're just like a whole lot of Bert Munro's with the world's fastest Indian, you know. They're so clever. They make this and that out of that. And, yeah, that's what I love about it. I'm 71 and I just wish I had another 100 years because I've got so much. I want to know what's going on.
Oh, you never know your luck, Helen.
Well,
yeah.
I told my son that if I die, if I strike or something down, he'd just bury me in the orchard. And I said, I want a periscope in my coffin so I can see what happens in the next 100 years. Well, today I've done my speaker. But I found a gas stove at the dump, and a good gas stove, a proper one with four elements, and I had that over at the cottage there, and the only reason they chucked it out because the door didn't shut about 2 inches.
Right.
So I just had it at the end of the bench, and when I want to cook a cake or something, I put a stick between the oven door and the back of an armchair.
Yeah.
So it worked perfectly. So you just think all the time, and
Yeah, because it's hard to come by stuff over here, isn't it? You know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, the boat coming once a week or something?
Well, lately it's been coming in quite a lot, but we still haven't got any gas, I think. And people, we have
three. I heard that there's no gas on the island or whatever.
Yeah, we just friends, you know. You've got a gas bottle for you, okay, make sure it's filled up when you, you know, give it back to me. And everybody helps everybody else. And and you just get used to going without, actually. You know, I came down with a Honda generator and a TV, and I had a Sky Dish and everything, and I couldn't be bothered listening to this bloody generator outside the kitchen every night, and you had to go and turn it off when you wanted to go to bed about 10 o'clock at night on a storm.
And that's the hum you may be picking up at the moment, ladies and gentlemen. That's the generator out there, isn't it? Just humming away. Yeah,
15 kVA one, that. So anyhow, I gave everything away, and I just went without power, and I just don't need power. And I only had a 1,000-litre water tank that up on a tank stand that caught water off the roof, and I never ever ran out of water because you just wash things in a pot, and then you know, when it gets too dirty, you go and tumble around a plant or something, you know. My daughter teaches, she works for the Defence Force in Auckland, and she worked for Brands for years. She did her doctorate at Vic Uni on sustainability and architecture and things like that. And
interesting.
Yeah, so I rang her now and again, and you know, with the Auckland water problems and that, and I hear on the radio, I said, tell everybody should have their own tank, and they say, well, it's not good to drink water off the roof. And I said, well, nothing's happened to any of us down here drinking it for hundreds of years. Like I said, my daughter flies around the country teaching Air Force and that to sustainability and water use and things like that, and I bring her up. I made a list the other day of all the uses for water, and there's 12 uses for water, and only two that you're probably better off having being on the mains, and that's cleaning your teeth and having a shower, your own personal. But all the other 12 things are washing your car, you know, that you don't worry.
Water the garden and all that.
But nothing ever happened to any of us from.
Because you would have been off the mains in the old stone cottage, eh?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Like I said, I had a generator, but I gave it away because I couldn't stand the noise of it. And I went without power, and I just didn't need power.
Went back? Yeah, it's probably a bit early for wetbacks that cottage, wasn't it, I suppose. Yeah. A lot of the houses I've been into over here have all got the wetback set up and heat the hot water up and whatever.
But some people still live on their own in old huts and things and do it the old way, heat up a big pot of water or something. And it's amazing, this common sense that you grow up with. I was on a gardening trip with a bus west of Nelson heading towards Motueka. And a grader was ahead of us on the river road, and we got too far to the left, and the bus tipped over on it, almost on its side. We couldn't get out the front door.
Oh, right.
And the driver managed to get up the back where I was sitting with Mum and my friend and her little boy on the right along the back seat, and he went to turn the handle to open the big back door, and the metal fatigue, the handle broke off in his hand, and he was like he's going to have a heart attack. He's holding on to things, puffing. And just like that, I got us out of the bus.
What did you
do? I noticed I had a big steel bar, thick as your little finger, going right through the middle and into a groove that far. And the way to shorten it is to bend it. So I said to Mum, you stick all your fingers behind the bar. We had to jam them behind the bar next to mine. I said, only pull when I tell you to pull. So we did about six pulls, and it did a big bend, and the door opened. So just like that, you can think about fixing something. It just comes to you.
Helen Bint there, from the Chatham Islands, having a chat of some of her lost experiences over there. So I hope you enjoyed that one. And that's it for the Over the Fence show for this week. And all going well, I'll be back next week with a guest in the studio, if it all works out good. So have a lovely week, everybody. And yeah, take care. Enjoy the sunshine while it's here. And I'm going to leave you with The Clean, Outside the Cage. Catch you next week. Ka kite.
more episodes, use the accessmedia.nz app for iOS and Android devices, or subscribe to this podcast via Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Apple Podcasts. This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.